course, is the theme song to one of the all-time great television sitcoms, The Dick Van Dyke Show, which ran for 5 years at the hand of my next guest. His name is Carl Reiner. I've actually had Carl on the air so many times over the years that I have lost track of how many times he's been on with me. But I do know that 3 years ago he was on to talk about one of his autobiographies, which was called I Remember Me. And then 2 years ago, he was on for his next autobiography, which included stories he forgot to put in I Remembered Me. That one was called I Just Remembered. And then last year he was on to talk about a book which included stories he had not put in the previous two autobiographies. That book was called What I Forgot to Remember. And now he's back with an autobiography that is singularly focused on the 5 years that he did the Dick Van Dyke Show and what led up to it getting on the air and those wonderful nights of entertainment it provided for America. The book is called Why and When the Dick Van Dyke Show Was Born. Carl Reiner, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back. And for all those nice words you said.
Oh, thank you. I was going to introduce you as a showrunner, because that's what it's called now for the producers and writers of TV sitcoms. That word didn't exist when you were in the business, did it?
No, it didn't. As a matter of fact, I laugh now when I see, you know, we did the Van Dyke Show. We used to fight for the last few seconds to get the tag on. We needed 28 minutes, 28 and 30, and they needed 15 seconds for, we had to do a public service announcement. I was always fighting for those. And I look now and I see that the 28 and a half minute show is down to 22 to 20.
Yep.
The situation comes to 20 minutes. And I said, well, at least now you get people who love commercials can see these whiz ads and Viagra all in one. Well,
you know, I was thinking about the commercials because in the book you talk at a certain point about having to get two big sponsors for the show. And this was a different time because now, as you mentioned, a sitcom is only about 20, 21, maybe 22 minutes, and the rest of it is all filled up with commercials to make the rest of that half hour. How was that different when you had the Van Dyke Show on the air? Were there only a couple of commercials?
Well, there were, I think, three commercials, one at the beginning, one in the middle, and one at the end.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you have to suck up to the sponsors, Carl?
Not really. They were very good about staying away. I guess, I don't know, the Federal Trade Commission or whatever it is kept them off our backs for the most part.
And I know that you you and I talked years ago about how you wrote the first 13 episodes and then went and pitched it and got Sheldon Leonard involved.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was laughing about when you said that, you know, when I wrote the first 13 and... And when I produced the show, I mean, when we started the show, the first I found out that I wrote the first 30 or 40 shows alone, and there was nobody, but I was the producer and story editor.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting credit as story editor. It was about 2 years into it. The third year, luckily, I got the help of a guy named Persky, Bill Persky and Sam Denoff. They started to write, and I would have died without them because it was... 7 days a week I was working, you know, and writing. But I got a credit as a story editor when I didn't write the shows because I used to do my own, you know, rewrite whatever I needed to rewrite up my own.
Yeah.
With Sheldon Leonard, a very dear man, he says, you know, you get paid to rewrite other people's shows, $1,500, I think it was. And he said, and you, when you write your own shows, you know, he said, I think you should get paid for rewriting your own show. And it was the first time. And now I laugh when I see that the credits, you see the producer, the executive producer, co-executive producer, co-executive producer, friend of the producer, friend of the producer's friend. There's about 10 different executive producers. I laugh, and the shows are not 28 minutes, they're 20.
Right, and you did 39 episodes a season, not 20 or 21 or 22 like they do now.
Right, 39. And we did 158 shows all told, 5 years.
Yeah, and then why'd you stop?
You know, we made a very big point of saying we're really good now, and I have a feeling if we keep going, we're going to start. We started not to repeat ourselves, but to repeat ideas and saying, let's go out a winner, and there's nothing better than going out a winner. You know, a prize fighter who fights that one last fight and shouldn't be fighting it and gets knocked out. And by the way, at that point, everybody was calling upon our people to do other things. Mary Tyler Moore has been called to Broadway. Dick had already done a couple movies, Mary Poppins, and I started writing for the movies, and I said, you know, rather than, you know, not pay attention to what we're doing, we saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and I said, let's go out steaming, you know, and we were right about that. It was the last few shows, were some of the best we've ever done.
I spoke with Phil Rosenthal a couple of years ago. He was the showrunner on Everybody Loves Raymond for over 200 episodes. And he told me that he would sometimes tell his writers, okay, we're done for the day. Go home and have a fight with your wife so we have an idea for a show tomorrow.
I know.
Did you do that with Persky and Denoff and the other people you hired?
No, every time I hired somebody, I would say, don't come up with a, unless you have some beautifully strange idea, I said, search your own life. I said, anything that happened in your life, that was a little untoward, that made a little noise, good, bad, or extra love, less love. I said, whatever it is, bring it in. Well, your kids did something untoward, and that's the basis of the show. I said, we are not any different than our audience. Anything we go through with our families, if we write about it honestly, the people will say, hey, that's just like us.
Do you purposely leave open spaces in the script that said Dick Van Dyke will be funny here, Dick will do something physical here, and then he would have to come up with a bit?
No. Dick filled in the physical things. I didn't leave things open. Oh, every once in a while I knew that there was a bit that Dick could do with, like an entertaining at somebody's party. I knew Dick had a raft of things he could do. I love those shows where we had to entertain, where Mary and Dick sang or danced, because those shows would be 23 minutes, and I would have that much less to write.
I have to ask you about one specific bit that is one of my all-time favorite pieces of physical shtick by anybody, and as you know, Dick Van Dyke was one of the best at it to begin with, but it was on the episode, I believe, where Richie asked where he came from.
Yes.
And you do a flashback to when Laura Petrie was pregnant, and Rob is very, very nervous about her maybe giving birth the next day.
Yeah.
And so he has himself in bed, but he's completely dressed in his suit with a tie, and he's got the hat that he has put down on the shelf right behind him, and he practices putting the hat on and jumping up repeatedly.
I know. As a matter of fact, that was one of the few times we did something that we never usually did, a little trick photography. We never used that. I think it was the only time we used it. It got such a big laugh when he put that hat on once and put it back on the shelf that we just repeated it. He tried it twice.
Yeah.
that was
absolutely brilliant. Now, is that something you put on paper, or do you say,
Dick did his best.
Yeah, he came out
with that? I said he dresses in his clothes, and he practices getting out of bed and all that, but I didn't. The hat was Dick.
It was absolutely brilliant.
This is maybe the best situation comedy that ever existed.
Yeah.
He's the most talented human being put on earth.
Let me ask you about a couple of the other...
He can still do anything. He's 90, and he can do anything he did when he was a kid. He can still do.
We just saw a clip of him on the on the Disneyland 60th anniversary.
Yeah.
You believe it? He put his life in danger dancing, you know, with the chimney thing again. That was dangerous. Just does it.
He's 91. You're 93 years old. You're both still spry and doing great, and I'm so happy about that. I'm talking with Carl Reiner, whose new book is called Why and When the Dick Van Dyke Show Was Born. Let me ask you about other cast members here. You write in the book that you had a little problem with Rose Marie in the first season. What was that?
The very first season, her agent, Harry Kallstrom, who was a wonderful agent, when he called me, he says, "I've got the perfect girl for Rosie. I mean, for Buddy and
Sally."
Sally, yeah. And so he said, and I said, "Perfect. I knew about her. She was a child star." I said, "Great." And she's the one who suggested Maury Anson. And I said, "You know, I was thinking of a younger writer like a Mel Brooksian type." And then I realized that if you get Maury Anson in, you get a human joke machine, is what we called him.
Yep.
And he gave us more free quips and ad-libs when we needed them.
Oh, he would add jokes in the script?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Anytime he had a quip that we wrote, he had five or six other better ones. But Rosemary was told that it's the pictures of, I mean, the situation comedy is about a television writers, and she thought the focus would be on them. My focus was on the family, you know, his wife and him and his child, and who works in television. And so the first year she was very disturbed with the fact that she didn't have enough to do. She kept saying, "We don't have enough to do," and each day was torture, you know. Each show, every once in a while, as a matter of fact, I would write a show specifically for Rosemary or for Maury to shine, like every 10th show or 8th show, but it was very, very difficult. And as a matter of fact, until at the end of the year, I said, I can't go through that next year if we go on, and we did go on, and I called it, we sat at my agent, our agent's office, and I said, "Rosie, here's what it is." She was very upset. She said, "Mary got the cover of Look magazine. Why did you always push?" I said, I said, "You got to understand this." And this is what I said. "Unless you understand what the show's about and can accept what the show's going to be about, we're going to have a tough time if you're coming back to play with us." And I said, the reason they asked for Mary, I didn't have anything to do with those covers. I said, the people, I was a little more, I used a little bit worse language than this. I really was testing it. I said, they wanted Mary to pose for the six-year because their observers, their buyers, the magazine buyers, want to see her tits, her ass, face.
Mm-hmm.
And I used it for...
Yep.
Another word there was not very nice.
Yeah.
I really did that to make her absolutely understand that I was serious about it. I said, "If you can accept that, then we can work fine together." I said, "If you can't, then, you're free to do what you want."
Mm-hmm.
And she accepted it, and we've been best friends ever since.
Oh, that's, yeah.
We still speak to each other every once in a while.
It would not have been as wonderful a show if you'd had to change cast members after the first season, right?
Would have been horrible.
Yeah.
How old is Rosemary now?
I guess she's close to my age. Maybe
yeah.
A little. Hmm. She was a star at 4. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Her biography is one of the saddest biographies I've ever read. Her father was a monster and left the family, left the mother. And the mother lived with the daughter, with Rosemary, in a one-room apartment with a little cook stove, not even a hot plate, and a bed in the kitchen. And they slept in one bed. And the father took Rosemary around to do these little spots, $50, $100. He kept the money and gave very little of it to their parents.
Mm.
I mean, to his wife and child. And I said to Rosemary, I said, "Mary, Rosemary," after I read the book, I said, "You have a right to be as much crazier than you are." And she's not crazy at all. She's got a lovely daughter who adores her, and she had a good marriage to a very fine trumpet player.
That's great.
Rosemary, Guy.
And I got to ask you, since we were talking about the trouble with Rosemary in the first season, you had another problem that first season, which is that the show was almost taken off the air because you didn't really have ratings, did you?
No, we were opposite Perry Como, who was one of the best, best singer ever. Everybody loved Perry Como, as I did. And we were opposite him, and the ratings were low. And we were a new show, and he was already established. And at the end of the season, they were saying, we'd like to rerun the shows in the summer, and we can only give you this amount of money. And my partner said, "No, that's not enough. It costs us more to put it on. We'll be losing." And I said, and I really did, I said, "I would give you the shows for nothing." I said, "Getting the shows on the air, Perry Como's off. People are liable to tune in. They're used to tuning in at that time. And when they see our show and see Dick and Mary, I have a feeling they're going to become fans of the show." And they did it. We took very little money. We stayed on, and the next season, boom, the ratings popped.
You were a huge hit from that point on. There's a story in the book that I found very difficult to believe, that at one point Not that I don't believe that this happened, Carl. I'm not calling you a liar, but I was just shocked when I read this, that at one point when you were writing the script for the pilot, Head of the Family, which you starred in before it became the Dick Van Dyke Show, that you had to submit it for Joe Kennedy's approval. The President John Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, had to approve your show?
Well, the point was that the money was put up for the pilot by Peter Lawford, and Peter Lawford was married to a Kennedy. And when I sent him the, and he was, you know, he put the money up, we were ready to do it. He said, would you send one to my father-in-law? I said, why? And he says, well, you know, he's like the scion of the family, and he wants to be, he's the arbiter of, you know, of what's tasteful and what's good, good morals. And I said, that whore master. I was living with Gloria Swanson, the star, and he's married. He's a rum runner. I said, that guy's going to be the arbiter of my I didn't send him this.
I love that. Before we go, I've got to ask you a question I've never asked you in all of our interviews. Who did you base Alan Brady on? I'm guessing it was not Sid Caesar who you would work with on your show shows.
Sid Caesar was... To this day he passed away, but we were friends all our lives. And during the show, we ate lunch every day, the whole cast and, the whole writing crew. And Sid, we spent weekends together, we'd go to movies together, certainly to restaurants. And he was a dear friend, but to have a protagonist, you know, for the boss to be the protagonist, you know, and make it tough on the writers, we needed somebody. So, you know, somebody violent. And I based it on three people. I based it on Jackie Gleason, for one, because he was a writer. I mean, he never spoke with his writers. They used to write the script and bring it to him, and he wouldn't even accept it from them. He said, slip it under the door of the hotel room.
Really?
Yes, he never spoke to his writer. Milton Berle had a whistle around his neck, and during rehearsals he would shout and scream at everybody. If anything went wrong, it was never his fault. He would scream at somebody. He was very insecure, very brilliant. He was a brilliant man, and I really like Milton. And the third one was based on Phil Silver's character in Top Banana, which was an amalgam of those kind of people where, you know, loudmouth guys who steal material and go on and make it their own.
So that's who Alan Brady was based on. I've always wondered that, and I finally got my answer.
Yes, and it's true. No, Sid was a pussycat.
Well, the book is a wonderful collection of great stories that you've written, and an enormous amount of photographs of everybody involved in this. You must have had Bess scanning pictures day and night to get this thing ready, Carl.
Oh, yeah. Well, we boxes full of pictures, and it's amazing what you can Google. If you're missing something, and everybody's got everything someplace locked away. We had no trouble finding. I think there were over 230 photos in there, something like that.
It's wonderful. One last question before you go. After the Dick Van Dyke Show ran its 5 years, you were a success. You went out on top like you wanted to. A few years later, you and Dick got together again for the new Dick Van Dyke Show, co-starring Hope Lang. Why didn't that work?
It didn't work because two things. One is the heart wasn't in it. The only reason it was written, it was Dick was in the living in the desert, and I visited him one day, and he said, you know, a studio opened near me. And he was sort of retired. He didn't want to do any of that anymore, and he retired from television. And he said, there's a studio here, and it seems silly to. And he thought he would have a pilot written. And I said, gee, it better be a pilot that works, because I'd hate to denigrate our old show with something that didn't work. And I remember writing the pilot, and I said, why? How would they accept the fact that he's married to? I said, the only thing they will be warm to, I said, if he has a baby, it's the birth of getting pregnant for the first time, you know. And so Hope Lang was very good, and it was a lovely pilot. The pilot was fairly good. But I wasn't able to stay with it, and we got people who didn't quite understand it, didn't quite understand Dick, and it was just not working. We had some very good people in it that I liked him. Chita Rivera came down to do things. But it just wasn't working, and so we just packed it in.
Do you think people were mad at him, thinking that he had divorced Mary Tyler Moore?
They wouldn't have if the show was good.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. It is wonderful. The book is available if you go to randomcontent.com. You can order your copy right now of Carl Reiner's new book, Why and When the Dick Van Dyke Show Was Born.
And if you ask me to autograph it personally to you and say something sweet like, you're the best person ever, I will do that, even though you're not.
Carl, it is always such a great pleasure. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you for having me. Next year, call me again. I have a new book called Me at 93, and I'm just finishing that.
Great, great. I will call Bess, and we'll set it up.
Okay.
All right, thanks so much again. Carl Reiner, his book, Why and Where the Dick Van Dyke Show Was Born, randomcontent.com, is where you can order it right now.